Good morning, everyone. It is past time for the meeting to get started. We are still waiting for one other person to have a quorum. While we're waiting, just a couple of announcements, and then we'll do what we can in terms of public comment, et cetera, until they get here. I want to know everyone to know that I am joined by Councilmember Mary Norwood and Councilmember Joy Shepherd, and I'm sure our staff is checking on some other members. But the full council meeting today will be held in this room. The renovations in the council chambers have not been completed. So we are going to try to make it work within this room. We will have overflow capacity if needed in other rooms so that we can work on that. I don't know if we've, Madam Clerk or Madam Director, if we made a final decision on how proclamations will be handled. If somebody could come up and let us know. I'm just letting the public know what's going to happen this afternoon. Thank you, Madam Clerk. Is it on?
The Council President, Council President Mitchell and I did do a walkthrough between the committee chairs meeting and this meeting, and the decision was made that proclamations would be held here in this room, would be delivered here in this room. The council person who is delivering the proclamation, when it comes time for that person, then they can come either stay at their seats or they can come around and come into this well space, and then the person who is receiving the proclamation also would join them there. We will have handheld mics for the council person who is delivering the proclamation.
I think that's a lot, so what I'm going to ask you to do for me, Madam Clerk, is to read my proclamations.
Certainly.
I think that would be probably the best thing in terms of, I mean, I don't know what other folks want to do.
Right.
But you can just read my proclamation, and I'll stand here with my guests, but you can just read my proclamation if you don't mind.
Certainly, that's not a problem. Always willing to do that. And again, we will have a cordless mic if you want to say some special words to your guest. We'll have that available here on the table.
Oh, okay, I got you.
Already.
In terms of reading, I can't, you know.
Right. That's a lot to maneuver.
Yeah. Okay, got you.
Sure.
The other thing, and I don't know if we have the final copies, but I would ask staff to make sure every council member has the draft. We're looking at the boards and commissions. I asked the staff to get together and have the first bite at trying to come up with some policies regarding boards and commissions. The issue is that we have established them over many, many of them, and some of them are not meeting, et cetera. One of the main issues is staffing. So we have criteria that we would like to consider. We'll have further discussion in this committee that we would like to establish. So that we make sure that the boards and commissions have staff, that they have adequate time frame in terms of sunset provisions, if they fail to ever meet, how they can be sunset, making sure that their bylaws, and that's primarily some of the issues that we're talking about. Looking, also they're going back and looking at the boards and commissions that we have now, because some of them we probably need to sunset or either make them have some staffing and criteria to make sure that they happen. So we'll pass that out now for committee members that are here. We'll pass it out at the council meeting, and we'll discuss it at the next time we meet.
So the draft, you're saying that's a draft of recommendations. Are you going to hand it out for us to look
yeah,
at?
Yeah, they should okay. have copies, yes.
Okay.
And let me just read it real quick since we're still waiting on Ms. Winslow. The Office of Research Analysts and members of the Municipal Clerk's Office met and reviewed our procedures related to boards and commissions. We discussed standardized criteria for legislation used to create boards and commissions. In addition, we reviewed previously adopted legislation establishing boards and commissions and categorized them by priority. Several recommendations came from the meeting. Is this the I'm using the old one. When the legislation establishes it, it should have a purpose, a compilation of the appointing authority, who should staff it, and the primary point of contact, when the meetings will take place, a sunset and duration requirement. The board and commission will automatically sunset once the purpose has been achieved, or if the board and commission fails to meet within 90 days of population or other number to be determined by the committee on council, or if it fails to establish a quorum within 90 days of adoption of the legislation. Amend the code to read may establish bylaws to shall establish bylaws. Define boards, commissions, task force, and authorities. We use those terms, but we need to talk about what actually those terms mean, or do they mean different things? And define the term staff the meeting. What does that mean? What does that entail for whomever we say is the appropriate staff? The other one is review previously adopted legislation establishing boards and commissions. The research team will be reviewing the boards and commissions to determine if they should be sunset based on criteria established by the end of August 2016 and annually thereafter. So they'll come up with a list, and we'll have an opportunity to vet it as council members. The clerk's office will provide an updated list of boards and commissions to include a column indicating whether it should sunset. And then the third objective they had was to categorized by priority, which was a suggestion that I have. And so we'll have a list of the boards and commissions that are required by a law, for instance, the Zoning Review Board, the Board of Zoning Adjustment, and then all the other boards and commissions that are established. So we will have further discussion on this, but I wanted to make sure my colleagues had a copy as soon as possible. I also want to recognize Councilmember Cleta Winslow. Thank you for joining. We do have a quorum, and I'll officially call the meeting to order. Ms. Shepherd.
So are you saying we're going to have a work session on this?
I don't know if it'll be a work session or a committee discussion. We can determine that, but they still have more work to do. But I just wanted to make sure everybody is up to date on what we're working on.
Okay. I think this is good. I'm glad to have input. I think you're on the right track. Because we got so many.
For some reason, I can't find my copy, but in the chairs meeting, here it is. No, that's not it. In the chairs meeting, and just so you all are alerted, please take a look. I assume they sent it by email. The president put out a process for the yes, the proclamations. Thank you. Okay, no problem. And this came from the president. He says, in an effort to bring greater predictability and timeliness to the presentation of proclamations, combinations, and other special awards during full council meetings, the existing protocol will be further amended as follows. A total of 3 proclamation slots will be available for each council meeting. A council member or council president may not reserve more than 2 proclamation slots at any full council meeting.
Repeat that one more time.
A council member or council president may not reserve more than 2 proclamation slots at any full council meeting. Each proclamation presentation is limited to a maximum of 15 minutes. All proclamation requests must be made to my office via email, care of Jim Elgar. Requests for a slot will be honored in the chronological order in which they are received by my office via emails. These changes will be effective October 3rd, 2016, full council meeting. All meetings currently have four proclamations in August and September, and those will be honored. So this is the president's guideline that he's going by. As we talk about the boards and commissions, this may be another one we discuss that same day, because there may be some other tweaking that we need to do. One thing I was saying is, you know, if a council member gives proclamations almost every council meeting, and a council member who hasn't given it in a while, and then they take up a slot, you know, how do we make sure that we have equity and opportunity for council members who haven't? So those are some of the issues we'll need to discuss. Any questions or concerns about that? It's to be determined. All right. Now, what else? I think that's it. The other thing that I talked about in the chair's meeting with the finance chair is that we need to come up with a scheduled date to do the follow-up work session, et cetera, on transparency. We have two pieces of legislation that are out there. One's in finance and one's on our agenda related to putting and posting expenditures online. And so we will be scheduling that as we can with the finance chair as a follow-up. I think it's had an opportunity to get through all the MPUs. And Ms. Norwood and I put out a survey, and I think we got some results back from that, too.
Oh, yes, we got several hundred responses back, and they covered every single zip code in the city. So they came from all over the city.
So we did the best that we can to follow up on the recommendation from the first work session was to engage the public and find out what their desires were. Any questions or comments on the updates? All right, we'll go straight to the yes.
Question about the process today. So we know we're going to do the proclamations. What about public comment? What's going to happen up under public comments? If people in the other room, will they come here, or how does that happen?
Yes. Public comment will be made here at this podium. So those persons, we do have, of course, the TV will be displaying the meeting. If they are not in this room, then they can come in at that time to deliver public comment.
One thought, if we just got little pieces of paper and put reserved on them, and as you signed up for public comment, you could come in here and put a reserved place for your seat, then we would not be trying to get people in from two or three other places.
Sure. So, we can.
And they would just write their name on where, you know, I'm going to get real, real granular. It says reserved. It has a place for their name. They put their name. They put it on a chair. And so we know that a person who's speaking is actually got the chairs.
The problem is, I'm not sure. I mean, should we then keep the doors closed until?
No, but people come in early to sign up for public comment. I think we can offer that if it's it's all filled up.
We'll try to work it out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else? All right. Let's move on. We've called the meeting to order. I've introduced the members. Without objection from the committee, we'll adopt the committee's agenda. We will approve the minutes without objection from the committee, and I'll entertain a motion on the adoption of the full council agenda. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, hearing none, it's approved. Item F is the public comments pertaining to items on the agenda. So if there are items that we're going to actually, we're only taking action on item 1 and 2 today, but any item that's on the agenda, you have 2 minutes. Are we ready with the clock, Campbell? Okay. And Mr. Howard.
Yes, thank you, committee members, and to folks here and to those watching on Channel 26 and online. Ben Howard, Senior Advocate, Public Policy Analyst. Well, I will say a word about G1. Ms. Amir. Ms. Amir has done, as she progressed and affecting her accomplishments, she has done a lot of volunteer work. Part of it has been done with disabled people, and I want to give her a word that after the APAP meeting this coming Saturday, if we don't get any movement on the Disability Committee, it's going to be all hands on deck, and we'll be asking you, Ms. Amir, to jump on board. Regarding H2, I like the phrase about actual duties because then, and when I go to inquire about a mover and shaker like Corliss Claire, I won't be referred to the law department or the CDHR. I can just say, well, these duties indicate that that person ought to provide us more transparency, especially with all the millions of dollars going to Adams Park and personnel changes that we can't get any information on. So I like that phrase, actual duties. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Tony Torres. You're going to wait till the end? Okay. All right, so under G1, I'll take that. It's 16C-5109. It's a communication by Mayor Kasim Reed appointing Farah Amir to serve as a member of the Atlanta Sister Cities Commission on behalf of the City of Atlanta. This appointment is for a term of 3 years, scheduled to begin on the date of council confirmation. It was favorable by Finance Executive Committee. I'll entertain a motion. Motion's to approve. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye. All those opposed, hearing none is approved. H2-160-1405, an ordinance by Councilmember Natalie Archibong. And that one, we have a substitute. If there's no objection from the committee, I'll bring the substitute before us, and I'll read that caption. It's an ordinance by Councilmember Natalie Archibong and substituted by Committee on Council. Ordinance to amend Chapter 2, Administration, Article 7, Officers and Employees, Division 2, Standards of Conduct, Section 2-814, Disclosure of Income and Financial to require existing or created positions whose job definitions or whose actual duties pose a significant potential conflict of interest to file an annual financial disclosure statement and for the other purposes.
Good morning. I'm Jabu Singhova on behalf of the City of Atlanta Ethics Office. This legislation was forwarded to Committee on Council on condition that it be reviewed and cleaned up by the Law Department. That has happened. So the document you see before has been reviewed and cleaned up by the Law Department. And the language which was to be added on page 5, sorry, the mic, on page 5, was that at the top of page 5, sorry, top of page 7, the substitute language, the chief operating officer or his designee shall provide a complete list of employees. So that language has been added to the proposed ordinance and as requested by council.
Okay, Ms. Winslow, Ms. Shepherd.
Can you repeat that again? You said at the top of page 7, what happens?
All right, so when we were before the Finance Executive Committee, the proposed ordinance,
you're fine.
Okay. The proposed ordinance was.
You don't have to
just
be that
keep
close
talking.
To it.
Just keep. Saying. Yeah. Just keep talking. We can hear you.
All right. So we were to add the language of chief operating officer or his designee, and that was the language because before the prior reading was that the chief operating officer shall provide a complete list of employees. At the time, it was not clear to the Finance Exec Committee who the designee would be in terms of determining who that list, going through the list. So that was the language that was added to the ordinance.
Okay, and just so just take one step back, I think that Mike, what Mr. Howard is trying to say, you don't have to be that close to it.
Okay. So the COO provides to your department a list of all employees, is that what
that
I'm understanding? Every year, or how does that work?
So part of the process that we have the a process of determining who files the disclosure statements. So we get that information from the Department of Human Resources. And as part of the language before, it was simply saying the COO provided us that information. Council wanted us to clarify who were we getting the information from, and we actually work with the Department of Human Resources. So therefore, that would be the designee of who we would get that information from.
I got you.
Yeah.
So it was just an extra step that was added in there to clarify.
A clarification, yes.
Yeah. Ms. Shepherd?
So
Well, this amendment, was that the only step, or were there others? You said that this is kind of tweaking some other things. Was this the only amendment that was made in terms of this legislation, or is this all new legislation? I haven't been following this one.
Right.
Actually, there's no new change. The document was just reviewed, just to make sure it was reviewed by the law department. The language that was
now,
requested.
This document is something that this whole document, this amendment, I'm saying, again, is previous legislation, but she made some amendments to it.
This, okay, I'm so sorry. This committee may have not seen this legislation. This is
right,
before.
So make sure they know all of this.
Yeah, so cover the whole legislation.
Okay.
Okay.
So you want me to start from the beginning concerning
yes.
this legislation? Okay.
And if you just highlight the changes, I think is what council members need to know.
All right, in terms of the current situation, in terms of the current law of Section 2814, which provides for annual disclosure of income and financial interests and other relationships by our city officials and employees, and these positions are listed. This is the current law. However, the current law does not provide for when we get the creation or abolishment of positions, and what happens with these positions, which may be abolished or created. We needed to make sure that we had equivalent to those in that section, because before it was not too clear. So let's say, for example, we had a director, a position of a director, and that position was given another title or another name. The prior reading of the code did not list any equivalents, but it would still be the same position, but just changed to another title. So the reason why we're seeking this amendment is to make sure that when we have these changes in terms of job descriptions, job classifications, that the code will now will be able to include those creations or abolish, excuse me, creation of positions. But the main point in terms of public policy is that we want to make sure that we're including positions which may raise a significant, a risk of a potential conflict of interest, which is really the goal of our financial disclosure law.
Ms. Norwood, did you have any specific questions? Oh, you're not done. I'm sorry.
The reason why we're here today before is because this has been an ongoing issue over the years in terms of, and this has become a challenge in terms of determining every year, because what happens is every year the ethics office is tasked with coming up with a list of employees and officials as well as members of boards and task commissions. And we have to make sure that this list is as accurate and in terms of making sure that the process is efficient. And it has not been that way before. Yes.
Yes, sure. You have the floor.
Okay, in terms of like Bureau of Buildings, there were some people that were let go for sundry of different things. I won't go into that. So were those positions already on your bucket list originally of people who had to?
Were some
inspectors.
Okay, some inspectors.
Yeah, that's number on page 6 of 8, number 13, inspectors of all departments and bureaus.
That may have not been included before. In other words, the language is not included in the code before. But inspectors, by virtue of their job description or job duties or job responsibility, may pose a risk of a conflict of interest. So the amended code will now provide for example, inspectors in different job duties or responsibilities who may pose a risk of a conflict.
But it didn't before.
There was not sufficient clarity to that point.
Okay, all right.
And another reason why we're proposing this amendment is consistent with the city auditor's report, which was before this committee, on our financial disclosure process. And that report was submitted to council in June. Based on that report, current descriptions in the ethics code did lack sufficient clarity to identify who was required to file under the code. And this proposed amendment will ensure that financial disclosure, that the process accurately aligns with job titles and descriptions of required filers. And also, I would also point out to council that the catch-all provision that we're seeking will authorize the addition of positions by the ethics office and the ethics board which may pose a significant risk of the potential conflict of interest. So really the public policy is that our process is that to be transparent and to be as efficient and fair as possible, which is why we believe that this proposed amendment will clarify as well as streamline the financial disclosure process. And I'll take any questions you may have.
Ms. Winslow, were you through?
Yeah, and again, I understand why you're doing this stuff. I still would say, and I can talk to you, I said this at the finance meeting offline about it. I think, you know, we want to make sure that we capture everybody, but I do think that your brush is a little broad in that for me, and I'm not sure what the total criteria is, but if an employee doesn't pick vendors, don't interact with vendors, don't interact with the public, and are just working, just workers that are insulated to their thing, I would like to have that discussion with you. I think that we're asking a lot of people to file disclosures that don't need to when we need to really make sure that we're focusing on the ones that we have.
Well, Ms. Moore, I would assert that based on, you know, my position and being in this office and working with the financial disclosure process, that we have done our best to focus on job descriptions which are provided by the city. So, for example, some of the situations you were referring to, if you have an employee that's working out of class, so, for example, you may have someone that's coded as an inspector, but they're performing clerical duties. The ethics office is not in the position to determine that on the face, because we rely heavily on the Department of Human Resources. We rely heavily on the respective departments based on that job description coded, for example, in our Oracle system. However, what happens is when that comes to our attention, so the employee that's in the inspector position that's really just performing clerical duties, we do remove that person from the list. So we do not require them to file, because inasmuch as it's a burden to that employee or official, it's also a burden to our office to have people filing, and I think it goes against public policy.
Well,
to have people filing who shouldn't be filing.
And what that's not the example that I had. The example I had, and I think it came a couple times from people in watershed, particularly operators of plants, saying, you know, I'm a operator. Why am I having to file this? I don't deal with the public. I'm not making those type of decisions. You know, it's just an insular thing. So why would I need to file?
Well, I would say to that one, in response to some of those positions that the person may have that argument, but we do have situations where we have persons that have outside interests or even outside business. So that operator may say, well, why do I have to file? But we do not know, for example, if they're seeking clients or they have clients who maybe have some ties to the city. And the other issue for the financial disclosure process is that we do look at outside employment.
So don't they have to get approval for the outside employment, and then you would know that person would have that interest?
Well, that's a whole nother process.
Okay.
But in terms of when you file the disclosure form, if you do have an outside business, that form you're supposed to list that outside employment. Everyone does not necessarily do that. And so for your operator, my argument would be that, yes, you may think you do not have contact with vendors, but we do not know if you have an outside business that needs to be disclosed.
Okay, and I think that's a perfect example, but then that makes it even worse, because you can have employees who are not disclosing who have outside interests that you're not aware of, too. So it seemed like everybody ought to be filing on that instance.
Well, and I mean, I'm not saying we have a perfect system. That's correct. You do have a lot. Sometimes people have outside business that do not disclose it. To the best of our ability, we try to capture everyone as we can.
You have to kind of wait till somebody tells on somebody.
Or they do business with someone and,
I think you solved my issue.
Okay. As I'm looking at this, we have subsection A, and that goes through what you're supposed to disclose. Then we have subsection B that lists 23 groups that have to disclose. Then we go to subsection C, and we go, so we have subsection C that discusses the process, and then on page 5 we go to subsection B again with the 23, and then on page 7 we go through the same language that we had on page 4 with the exception of subsection F. So what I'm saying is, which seems to be a little different, so it's, you know, if we're saying that every single person who's a member of every board, every authority, every commission, every everything needs to do this, and I'm going through it trying to figure out what it is I'm...
See, one of it is...
The amended version starts at the top of page 5.
Okay.
So you
just repeated 99% of it because you're making a few amendments, and I don't have a red line copy for that.
Correct.
Okay. It, my concern is making sure that when we ask people to be on boards and commissions and whatever, that we are pretty clear, and that may be having the clerk and the ethics department talk with us, that they're really clear that they are following this and that this is easy to understand what they're supposed to disclose.
Ms. Long, I think this is pretty apropos, because at the time that we discuss these criteria for boards and commissions, if the staff will make a note, I think one of the requirements is that whoever we appoint, we need to make sure that we get them a copy of what their requirements are to the city.
Well, I was going to state, council member, that when you're sworn in on the board,
who are you?
Theo Pace, analyst for Committee on Council. When you're sworn in on a board or commission, and I believe the clerk can verify that it does say that you're required to complete all required financial disclosures.
Okay. And I think just up front, we need to find a process when we appoint these people to make sure they have a copy of the ethics code and their requirements. Maybe she can do a one-pager, because I think people need to know that before they say yes. Because they may...
Exactly.
But we've gotten a lot of pushback over the years, to your point, Ms. Norwood, concerning filing of disclosure forms and why they're required to file it from our appointed body. There is some concern that they're not aware of this this requirement.
Could you prepare a one-pager that we can have, so when we make these appointments, that we can share that with them so that they won't have to call you later and ask you why? They'll know up front, and they may decide, hey, I don't want to tell all my business. I just won't do it.
I mean, I would do that. I would say that the form is very simple, and there's no financial information being revealed. Your personal information is simply to make sure you don't have your interests are correctly aligned with the position you're taking. So,
and the thing is, I just think people need to know that. Know it's a requirement, and know that it's a requirement up to a year after they're finished. Some people may not, whether you're asking them or not, they may not want to do it. But we need to let them know up front so we can add that into our criteria. Yes, Ms.
Well, I just was going to say that since everyone who is being recommended for a board has to appear before the Committee of Purview, it is the perfect time to give them a copy of the form and a one-pager, so that on camera they know that this is part of what they're accepting.
I think we can ask them that. I'm suggesting that at the time I decide John Doe needs to be so-and-so, I need to get them a copy of that from the clerk's office before we even vet it.
Okay.
So they don't have to be on air saying, no, I'm not doing it because I don't want to fill out the form.
Okay. Are you saying on the front end, at the time, if I ask for an appointment with someone?
You make sure you get, we have a...
So once they come in and they go through the procedure through the department.
Before it's even put in legislation, mm-hmm. I think they yeah. need to know.
That they need to, whatever they need to do, they need to know that a part of this volunteering that you will be asked, required to have a financial disclosure.
Right, and so then if they tell the staff, well, I don't think I want to do it, then we can quietly file it away.
You know, we're getting ready to set ourselves up. We ain't going to never have no commissions.
But I think what she's saying is that
we're going to scare these people.
I think if we put it the way that she just put it, that's why I'm saying if you would do a nice one-pager.
We would do a one-pager. And here's the thing. This is not new to many jurisdictions where you're having to serve on a board or a task force. And again, this is not personal information. This is simply to make sure, again, that you do not have an interest and may pose a conflict of interest. So we will prepare something simple. I don't think it's, we definitely don't want to deter, we don't want to deter anyone from serving because we do recognize and respect service.
Right, and they just need to know. And then they also need to generally know that there is standard of conduct and that kind of thing so that people don't run afoul of it.
That helps us, too.
Anything else on this? Are we ready to vote or a motion? Okay, there's a motion to approve.
On substitute, Madam.
I haven't finished yet. Thank you. I know you ain't going to let me forget. 16-0-1405 on substitute. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Hearing none, it's approved on substitute. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, those are the items that we had to discuss. The other items will be held. We will move the precinct and polling place paper at the next meeting. There are other changes the clerk has said have come up that will need to be made. I talked about the transparency piece that we will schedule with the finance committee. And now we will move to the next item, which is remarks from the public pertaining to work of the committee, 3 minutes each. We'll start with Mr. Torrance and then we'll go with Mr. Howard.
Good evening, everybody. All right. I want to talk to you about all the work that we're still doing in the Proctor Creek watershed from the last conversations that we had about watershed and green infrastructure improvement inside that watershed and mm-hmm. how much money will be going into the Proctor Creek watershed.
Mr. Torrance.
Yes.
The in committee on council, mm-hmm. because we have our meeting right before the council meeting, we have limited time, so we ask people to make sure that they speak to items that are in the purview of the committee.
Okay.
But since Mr. Howard knows the rules, but and every once in a while he's pretty good at being creative, and so I'm going to let you go ahead. Thank but you. Just for future, the next right. time, just make sure it's a committee on council issue because this is actually public comment that you're making that the whole council should hear. But okay. Go ahead.
All right, thank you. So what we're having is now is challenges as far as like with the funding side of the city of Atlanta trying to help us implement some of these projects in Proctor Creek, some of the activities that's going on right now in partnership with the U.S. EPA government as part of the Federal Urban Waters Partnership. We came to you all and provided a presentation of all
just
the
back, step one, okay. step behind, okay. back,
all right.
yeah.
So we provided a presentation to you all the work that we were doing a couple of months ago, and I believe that was at what committee that was. It wasn't public safety. I believe it was utilities, Natalie Anchorbon. As of today, there's no response. So to hear what's going on with the planning board, commission, and things of that such.
I'm going to need you to step okay. back a little bit because yeah. you're bouncing. Right. Yeah.
That such. What we want to do is ask the city of Atlanta to pull either way it goes, it's like that. To pull, and I'm just standing here.
So I don't know what's wrong with that mic, but yeah. go ahead.
Okay. So what we want to do is ask the city of Atlanta to pull at least $1 million out of the general fund to support the Proctor Creek Stewardship Council and all the work that we're doing inside of the watershed, because right now we done jump started at least 3 projects with no funding. One of them has been funded just recently, working with EPA and the
they can hear you on the air,
but not you.
So
one of the projects jump started in partnership with EPA, known as the Federal Urban Waters Free Trash Program, to collect tires from Proctor Creek and also the trash from the creek as well. The watershed, I mean, for the workforce part has been funded, but the overheads has not been funded to this part. The Boone the Beltline project has jump started. No funding as far as like dealing with community engagement and all the activities we're doing with that. So we're still asking the City of Atlanta to support the projects that we have online right now, because we have community folks that's a part of these programs and activities. So we need the resources and the funding to go with it. And that's all I have to say to that. Thank you.
Thank you. And we've been joined by Councilmember Michael Julian Bond. Mr. Howard.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Madam Chair, for those who are coming later on, this particular microphone will fight back against you if you blow puffs of air into it. So at an angle or even to the side, it's good. On the presentations and the awards, this is a dynamic change over the period of years. There's still some quirks to be worked out, as you pointed out, for those who only make presentations occasionally and those who make them often. But this is a dynamic change, and I'd like to have
talking about the president's proclamation.
Yes, ma'am.
Changes.
Yes, and I'd like to have a copy of that to share with the Atlanta Planning Advisory Board and other people who have been denigrating the process.
If Mr. Theo Pace can get you a copy.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much. Regarding boards and commissions, if and when, and I hope you do, look at the bylaws of boards and commissions, I would like for you to pay particular attention to those provisions that inhibit citizen participation and that enact the boards and authorities and task forces' own version of discipline and punishment upon folks. There needs to be some kind of standard somewhere.
Could you stop the clock for a minute?
Oh, thank you.
If the staff will make note when you all get together to add to the list, maybe we should pull bylaws that do exist, and we might have to make sure that bylaws have at least minimum criteria. So we'll look at that, Mr. Howard.
Wow, that'll be dynamic. Thank you very much. So with that, I'm going to short circuit my full presentation and just bring up one more item. And you kind of alluded to the manner in which I bring it forth, because this one has a dual connotation, elections and other things. The question came up at a community organization, does a person have a right to do this? At the end of the meeting, just before adjournment, does a person have a right to say, folks, I would like to introduce Ms. Smith or Mr. Smith, who's campaigning for office in November?
Again, that's a community development issue, but I'll be happy to answer that. After the meeting is adjourned, then they can say, hey, everybody, here's so-and-so, but you cannot do anything of that political nature during the official meeting time. So mm-hmm. What I've seen, how I've seen some MPUs work with that is immediately following the adjournment of their MPU meeting, then they may have a candidate form or allow people to talk, but you cannot do it as a part of the meeting.
Even make introductions.
Not as a political candidate.
Yes, and it makes sense, but we need to codify this.
Well, it's already written that you cannot do anything. I don't know the exact language.
I know.
But it's already written there.
No, but that's the problem.
Let me finish. There's no need to codify it. they're not following the rules if they are introducing someone as a candidate running for office during the official meeting. After the meeting is adjourned, they can do whatever they want to do.
I got it. And okay.
Or before the meeting is called to order.
Yes, ma'am. What was that?
She wants to let you finish and then she
Okay, good. Well, then the last thing I want to say, I don't want to press the issue, but we really need to we need to be able to hand the person the sheet of paper who's a non-believer and say, this is where it's written and this is what is written about your wanting to introduce somebody at the close of a meeting and not after the meeting. This is city law. Thank you.
Well, it is in the law, whoever it is. They can certainly refer to the code of ordinances. They will see there's no political activities, and to the extent that they're doing anything other than that, someone else like you, I'm sure, can say you can't do that. If they have a question with it or someone, I mean, you can have them call. I'm sure Ms. Mitchell will make sure that they're aware of that. She's the MPU coordinator, and she will give that person.
Yes, but it's all variable, and I do know, I explore the ordinance, I can guarantee you that the wording that you just expressed, and which I think is common sense, is not in the city's code of ordinances, and I'm going to leave it like that. The attorney is here.
There are specific language to say you can't introduce somebody.
Right.
No, because you can't codify every potentiality, but generally it states that you cannot do political activities during a MPU meeting, and that includes introducing people.
But generally is where people's individual decisions come into play.
And when that happens and someone doesn't understand that, then they can call the MPU coordinator and they can clarify it for them.
Okay, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, Ms. Shepherd.
Oh, and I have seen that happen. I'm going to say to Mr. Howard, it has happened. I've seen it happen. Maybe not at some of your NPUs, but it has happened, and I do see it happening. And to that point, what I would recommend we do is on the NPU agenda, the actual official agenda that is at every NPU, that needs to be noted on the agenda every time. Some of my NPUs do actually have it says no campaign. Even for us who are elected, they would come up and tell you this is not a format platform for you to campaign. Some NPUs do it, some don't. I've seen, and that's very clear, some NPUs, but I've also seen some NPUs formats where it's really way in the line, kind of crossing the line when they actually talk about people and introduce people. And so if it was on actually every NPU agenda going forward, not even during campaign season, but continuously,
right,
then that will be clarified that you can't do that. And I would suggest that we talk to the plan department about that.
If it's no objection from the committee, can I ask our staff, Mr. Pace, to draft a letter to Ms. Mitchell
and Ms. Jacks also,
and the commissioner of planning, saying that this has been brought to our attention, that we have a recommendation that it be, and it continuing, particularly since election season is coming up, that it be printed, because I think they print now eligibility all the time. If they can print the code section related to campaigning, and then also ask them to follow up and send an email or correspondence to every MPU chair and vice chair and APAB members, represented delegates and alternates, at least those people, that outlines that so that everybody's aware. Is that okay with the committee?
Yes.
Mr. Bond, is that okay with you, or you had another comment?
No, I just wanted to add to, I think it's a great idea, but I think it also ought to have a clarifying opinion as to what might be considered campaigning.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Some people may not think introducing someone.
Yeah.
So would we cite the example of introduction, and then any other examples of what's considered campaigning? Some of the other things that I've seen happen, and Ms. Shepherd's more than right, because we don't have consistency across MPUs, that would include, you all let me know if you're wrong, but that also includes passing out information. Are you getting this stuff down, Mr. Thiel? I see you passing out information, putting information for their campaign on the table with public information, that kind of thing.
This is dynamic.
None of that should be done during the official meeting.
Yeah, that's dynamic. Thank you very much. Yeah.
And the other thing, too, is you have to be careful. If it is being held in a public building, a city facility, they can't do any of it before, they can't do it during, but they can't do it before or after because it's in a public building. Because if they had the MPU here at City Hall, they're not to do that campaigning.
Yeah, thank you.
You had something, Ms. Winslow?
No.
Anybody else?
And that includes a library because some...
Does Fulton County have the same rule?
Oh, okay.
That's Fulton County.
Oh, right. Okay. Anything else on that? Anything else, Mr. Howard? You got 10 seconds.
No, that's good. No, I'll let you go.
And it is actually kind of not... Even though the election part, see, you good. It's stretching it. It's really community development, but we're gonna send out the first correspondence.
I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Thank you all.
Anyone else from the public? Anything else for the good of the committee? If not, we stand adjourned.